This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors that have been passed on to you from generations past and from our dominant culture and start parenting with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Laura Hernandez. We talked about her mama systems to help create a feeling of being a team in your home. Welcome to the show, Kelly Nault. Kelly says, I believe temper tantrums are a smart mom's greatest gift. Wow, that is such an amazing perspective. She guarantees it. But 24 years ago, Kelly struggled with a strong-willed child whose superpower was finding all her child discipline loopholes. Oh, how much do we feel that? Then she got help. Instead of believing positive discipline or attachment parenting was the answer, she created a customizable smart mom path, which helps dedicated moms raise a respectful child, but without mom burnout. Oh my gosh, I'm excited about that. Nor breaking your child's spirit. Oh man. I'm excited for that too. Okay. Kelly had the honor of speaking to over a million moms as a parenting spokesperson and has been featured in publications like Today's Parenting Magazine. And she has an award-winning book called When You're About to Go Off the Deep End, Don't Take Your Kids With You. Welcome, Kelly. I'm super excited to talk to you.
Great to be here. I'm excited too.
So, okay, so this is a little off topic, but I like to do a funny icebreaker question. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, well, funny enough, when I was in first year university, I was voted as the one to most likely turn into a cartoon character for Disney. But when I was little, I really wanted to be a teacher or counselor. And so I've really combined both. Now, if I could do it my coaching in a musical theater style, then it would be perfect.
Ooh, I have friends I could connect you with if you want. Now, that's cool. I always wanted to be a Disney character. So that's what I wanted to.
I could have rocked Belle.
Oh yeah, I could see it. That's awesome. So, okay. So with that in mind, wanting to, the animated or teacher, how did that shape who you have become?
Wow. I think, you know how you think you know something, but then you realize you have no clue. Mm-hmm. That's really how I started. I think I was the kid that was always very perceptive. Like I had perceptions of really being an observer. And so I think teacher was a really easy fit for me. However, as I got older, I think what it did for me is that I think I hid behind it in terms of my people pleasing, my perfectionism. If that makes sense to you, like I am completely a recovering people pleaser. Bar none.
Okay.
I've had to be humbled many times throughout my life with that one. That's why mom burnout is such an important topic. And near and dear to me, having had chronic fatigue and dealt with fibromyalgia as well.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I've paid my dues, I feel. But I think starting out, you have this idea of what that looks like. And often life sends you on a journey that you never even imagined. And that's definitely what it was for me.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy how it's, you just don't know. You're right. Life does send you on these crazy things and, you kind of learn to roll with it, right? or use these things, these opportunities, these, challenges, right? As opportunities to find.
Completely. Like I just thought of an example in terms of the teacher part. For instance, I was asked to be one of the keynote speakers at a homeschooling conference. This is years ago. This is like 15 years ago. And I remember looking around thinking like, oh my goodness, I would never homeschool. And I was a little bit embarrassed because I'm walking around and I'm watching all these homeschoolers. And I'm a bit embarrassed because I'm supposed to speak to them, but I'm feeling a little bit like not feeling completely congruent. And then, I mean, the joke of it is, you know, never say never, because 4 years later, what am I doing? Homeschooling my son, you know? Yep. So anyways, life does take you on adventures where originally I thought I'd be a teacher in a school, ended up being a homeschooling mom. Like you just don't know, but that's the brilliance of life. And yeah, keeps that's it interesting.
Yeah, that's so amazing. I love asking that question about where you come from and how it's brought you. Cause I just to get like a glimpse into you and how you've like grown into who you feel like you're calling your mission is in life and how that was inspired by maybe your family culture when you were growing up.
Oh, I get the link.
You know? And so it's really cool to be able to hear that. And so now you're an author, you're a coach for moms. And what was the pivotal experience in your life that made you feel like this is what you needed to do?
Yeah, I remember it really clearly. I was on the playground and there were some other parents, and you know how you're just, you know, chatting. It's one of those times and sometimes you'll chat with parents you wouldn't normally chat with just because you share this commonality of being at the playground, right? And I had a parent look at me and said, wow, the boys are so different now. Like they're so much better behaved. Like, what are you doing? And I had a bunch of other parents like ask me this. And so I would share it with them. And then like the next week we'd be back at the playground. They're like, oh my gosh, I tried that. And wow, it was so amazing. It totally worked. And it just started to snowball. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, like this is really amazing. To the point where then suddenly was asked to be on radio and television, and it took on a life of its own. But it was in that moment of another parent recognizing and seeing the transformation from an outsider's perspective. Now, the punchline is that I wasn't a parent yet. That's the crazy, probably the craziest part of my story, is that here I was, this like parenting expert, like being asked on Montel Williams' show in the day, which was just under Oprah at one point, and I wasn't a parent yet. And so really in my 20s, I was the non-parent. A lot of parents love to hate, and rightly so, because I thought I knew a lot about parenting. And I'm sure some of you can appreciate maybe friends who aren't parents yet, or, you know, that always have, you know, their own judgment or their own take on things. I was a childcare worker and I got really good at it. I was working with the kids that others had given up on. But I had this case come across my desk. It was a single mom. She had two boys. No one would work with them. The last person who did, they beat up on the public bus. And I went in totally thinking this would be a piece of cake. But the night a dessert plate literally went zinging past my head, I realized like, oh, maybe I don't know as much as I thought I did. And, you know, I was doing my master's in counseling psychology at the time, and I got what no parent, well, it's very rare, I got to work with some of the best of the best. So one of my mentors was Dr. Jane Nelson. She wrote the book Positive Discipline in the day that, I don't know, sold 5 million copies, et cetera. But these were the people that I could call. So when the kids weren't just bouncing off the walls, they were literally pounding on them. I could call them. Use the bat phone. Like, what is going on? And so, yeah, that's also part of my story. And oh, they were also blind from birth. They would have given Helen Keller a run for her money. But I ended up living with them for 7 years. And they were my most amazing parenting lab, because there were days where I thought, okay, seriously, I'm going to end up in some mental institution. And they are going to end up in a juvenile delinquent center. Like, they were really those days. And I think as parents, all of us have those fears. Yeah. You know, those moments where your child does something and you're like, oh, they're going to end up on the street. They're never going to amount to anything. Oh, you know, I've recreated all the ugliest parts of my own childhood. You know, all of those crazy fears we have. Mm-hmm. They started way before I was a parent for me. I got a lot of them.
Got a lot of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you say that, I'm like, I think every parent goes through that. They have that thought. I'm going to be in a mental institution because that sounds really relaxing right now. Or my kids are going to go crazy.
Or the other one I've heard a lot from, and I experienced this too, is if your child is really melting down or having one of those like Academy Award winning like meltdowns, and you're like looking around, you're like, okay, they're going to call social services on me. Like, the cops are going to show up in this parking lot. I know it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even more so, I mean, as a homeschool parent, I mean, everybody feels that way. But when I feel that way, especially as a homeschool parent, because people have stigma around homeschooling, and then there's not as much checkpoints for parents to prove, no, I'm not a bad parent. You know? So anyways, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's so fascinating. I love that. I love your story. I love hearing about your experience. And so that brings us into the next question that I like to talk about is, what is a dysfunctional belief that's generally accepted by parents that you address?
Yeah, one of the biggest ones is that strong-willed children's behavior is a problem. I actually believe that strong-willed children's behavior is the solution to a problem they have. And so our moral obligation as parents and as me supporting moms and dads is to figure out what the real problem is.
Can you say that again? Just, I want that first part about that it's not the problem, it's the solution. Just repeat that.
Strong-willed children's misbehaviors, or what we consider their misbehaviors, is not the problem. It is a solution to a problem they have.
Wow. So it's really, that's what they're channeling, the problem is channeling into that behavior. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's helping them to, that's their outlet. That's their communication skill that they have to be able to communicate. Like, it's a symptom of the problem, but the symptom is like, what's giving them that release of what the real problem is.
Totally. So for instance, like, I think it's in negotiation, they teach this, like, you can add, I think they call it like a red herring or something. It's like you add something you don't really want to kind of get them off the scent, like get them off the trail. And I feel like it's the same thing right now, what is perpetuated actually not only among parents, but around a lot of the child experts out there, is that this is a problem. And okay, then this is the solution. The solution is self-regulation. The solution is Ritalin. The solution is blah. You just fill it in, right? The solution is more boundaries, more discipline, a different school, a different type of schooling, right? But it sends us on this crazy wild goose chase that is exhausting for parents. Exhausting. So if you are listening right now, I just want to really acknowledge you, because spirited kids, strong-willed children, if you have more than one child in your household, usually you have at least one of them, they are tougher to parent. And they are also some of our biggest, greatest parenting gifts, because it gives us the opportunity to get really real, to get really humble, which really doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Okay.
But it makes us a better person. It makes us more compassionate. It makes us stronger in the end. It ups our game, our parenting game, in so many ways as just a human being.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to address what you said there for a second about that. It's not about changing up, finding a solution, you know, like, even though I'm an advocate for different kinds of schooling or exploring different options, the problem will just follow you to whichever, whichever thing you choose to do. And yeah. So the solution isn't the same for everybody. You know, it's like,
never.
You can say, oh, well, just bring them home and they just need more parenting time. It's like, well, that's not necessarily true either. You need to be able to know what to get to the root of the problem, so that then you can find the real solution that's going to actually address the real problem.
Really. I was just working with a client, and just to give you an example, I always use different names and change some of the stories. But let's just call her Jody. I'm just going to call her Jody.
I'm happy to be your client. Go ahead.
So Jody has two boys, and like often happens, she'll come to me that one is the problem and the other is the innocent bystander who is, you know, blessed in all ways. And right. And that's just in terms of the balance that happens. It's almost always that way. But her trouble problem, her spirited child, he's been hitting, he's been swearing, he's been, you know, labeled ODD, oppositional defiance disorder, the gamut. And yet it was interesting because the more we went down and deep into it, one of the questions I asked her was, how did she feel during these times where he's swearing at her, et cetera? And it came up that when we started to really identify her feelings, I asked her, if you could put a character to those feelings. The character she came up with was Miss Hannigan from Annie, which I thought was so perfect, right? Yeah. Like the cigarette hanging out of her mouth, like, you know, like that was the feelings that were coming up. But it was really fascinating because I think so often, especially mothers, we care so deeply and we take on so much and have that sense of such responsibility that if we're not perfect, if we're not on our A game, we have so much shame. Mm-hmm. And so whenever this was coming up, she was like, oh no, like, no. And that's what most of us do, even to our own children's misbehavior. It's like we fight against it, where really what we need to do more is to embrace it, to get curious. And instead of putting on our fighter pilot outfits, like, okay, let's shoot them down, you know, and get in there, to really put on our like lab coats and go, that's interesting. You know, what's my theory on this? Do we have and to get curious? And it's a very different perspective. And so when we did this with her, Miss Hannigan, I call it the monster mom persona. So I actually have a free mom personality type. And she had taken it. She said, yes, I'm the monster mom. And I was like, okay, we all have that part of us, right? But when I asked her, I was like, you know, when in your life has Miss Hannigan helped you? And we started to identify all the times where it actually, frankly, had helped her survive many, many situations. Mm. And so I think it's also, you know, as much as we're parenting our children, where we need to come is to parent ourselves. Because in those moments when we're losing it, we're not in the parenting driver's seat at all. We're often flipped right back into our fight and flight, or as a five-year-old, we're having our own temper tantrum meltdown that's like, you know, you're not listening to me. I won't stand for that, you know, and it just triggers us so deeply. But that trigger really has nothing to do with what's going on, but it's an opening for the healing. It's an opening for change. And that's when I get really excited with my clients. And it's so fabulous for then me to see how quickly things can start changing more organically, rather than hooking on to a technique, a medication of this. And I'm not saying, like, again, every parent and every child has their own path.
Yeah.
But if you don't get to the real heart of the matter, you'll go spinning around and around, and it almost always leads to mom burnout.
Yeah.
Or worse, divorce, or worse, like all kinds of things.
It that can escalate into anything. Yeah. And, or it could perpetuate over a span of years and years, and then it escalates into something that you just can't even, I mean, look at our society, our culture. It's devastating, right? So that makes me want to ask you, like, okay, you talked about shame and you talked about how we get into this fight or flight state when our kids are having this power struggle, when we're having this power struggle with our children, right? And so where does that come from? Like, why do we feel like that's our only option is to retaliate by, you know, okay, this is by meeting it with a power struggle, basically. Like, why, why do we feel that way? Why does it feel like, when our kids are acting out, they're swearing at us or throwing things, well, I've got to put my foot down and stop this behavior, right? Where do you see that? How do you, like,
I feel like we have examples of it all around in our culture, yeah. sadly. And even though, so I call it the pendulum of parenting, where, and most people have heard like authoritative, permissive, you know, I call it like the softy and like the monster mom personas, right? Mm-hmm. So with those personas, the challenge for me is that we, as a community and as a culture, I feel like anytime we want to have change happen, we do the complete opposite. And, you know, we've all heard throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. So we don't really go deep to look at what parts of this are working so we can keep those. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like just in our culture, we just swing back and forth, even let's say politically, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Like mm-hmm. oftentimes in most countries, we have two strong political parties. One is voted in, the other fights against them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To get them out. The next time they switch, right? And the other one does. And then the other party tries to redo, you know, undo everything that the other one did. And then they switch.
Yeah. And the problem with that is the citizens and constituents are sitting there in the middle going, hey, we're not getting our needs met. And doesn't seem like the politicians are even fighting for our needs anymore. Anyways, they just want to keep their position. And that's how it is with parents, right? Like we're going, well, I'm supposed to be the boss. I'm supposed to be the parent. I'm supposed to be in charge and disciplining you. And so I'm going to keep that position by fighting for it.
Totally. So it's a power trip. Yeah, you know, exactly. It's a power trip. And really where it comes from is our own insecurities of yeah. really not accepting that, you know, for me, the greatest leaders also have humility. They use collaboration. They listen to others. They get continual training. They, you know, keep learning, all of those things. But as soon as we say, and here's the other thing I've learned. As soon as we say, oh, this is it, we're doomed.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's like, oh, this is the technique. Okay. Natural consequences. That's what it is. Timeouts. Oh, that's what it is. This new jar where we're going to put all of our things in. That's where it is. Like whatever it is, like we gleam on, you know, the weighted blanket. Oh, that's the solution, you know? And I mean, I love my weighted blanket, so don't get me wrong, but I do love my weighted blanket. We're a weighted blanket kind of home. But the challenge is we put so much, we lose our objectivity and we lose our creativity for potential and opportunity. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we say, oh, this is it. Now I don't have to work at it anymore. Right. Relationships right. take work. Hate to break it to you, but they take work and effort.
They take resourcefulness. They take creativity. They mm-hmm. take, yeah. I agree with you. Totally. Like you can't be dogmatic about one form of parenting when every person that you're raising and every person in your home is different. And the dynamics of their needs are different. Like if you're not addressing the actual problem and you're just trying to cover it up or just put a Band-Aid on it or whatever it is, then you're never going to find that solution, the real solution.
Totally. And so that's why, like, I call it the smart mom path smart dad path for the few dads that come on and have the courage to work with me too, which is great. But for me, smart stands for simple, meaningful actions repeated over time. Mm-hmm. But the base level of that for me is what I call the love foundation. And so, I mean, all of us love our kids. All of us say that. But for me, love stands for living our values every day. And so until we get really clear on where are we putting our value, right? So I can say, oh yeah, I value responsibility and respect and this and that. But as soon as, you know, my spirited child swears at me or tries to hit me or says, no, I'm not going to do that. Or I'm not going to brush my teeth. I don't want to brush my teeth. Right. Mm-hmm. All of those go out the window. And so for me, part of it is a process of really looking at with the time you have, with the tasks you do in your day, What do they really say about what you're valuing? And often they have very little match to do with what you truly do value. And that's where I feel like I can be the most help, is helping to align those, because we can't see our own stuff. We really, really can't. And I had a new client on. I do these parenting power hours, which is kind of like my first session with somebody. And I never, because I don't take all clients on. I only take them on if I really feel like they're really going to do the work and they're really ready. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I had for her, she had a bunch of goals for her family for this year. And I said, okay, you know, looking at this list, how confident are you? Give me a percentage. How confident are you that by September you will have nailed these? And she hummed and hawed and said, 65%. But then it was interesting, because I think she felt like, oh, but it should be higher. Like, and I was like, but who taught you? And let's go back to your role models. Mm-hmm. And let's go back to, so I also think, I don't know, you know, and I've really had to go here, especially with being, going through like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, asking for help, I think is just, there's such a sense of pride and that shame part again, that somehow truly asking for help is one of the toughest and hardest things to do. And yet the most essential step to take.
Yeah. Wow. Well, awesome. Awesome. I love that. I love everything that you just said. I was just like zoned in on what you were saying. It's so true. And that's something that I think is so important. When you say living your values, right? Mm-hmm. Living, what was the O representing again?
Living our values every
living
day.
Living our values every day. You know, when, and being able to address, well, where are those values coming from? Mm-hmm. Who taught us these values, and are we living them, right? We want that congruence in Absolutely. Our lives. And that's what creates the family culture. When you're talking about how it's like those things arise, the conflicts and all that stuff goes out the window. Well, actually that's your family culture. Our family culture is whatever we default to. And Ooh. the goal is redefine what your defaults are. And being able
I'm to, writing that down. Yeah.
Well, it's so crucial. There's so many, because when we get into that fight or flight zone, we revert to what's comfortable. We revert to what feels right or what's normal to us. And ultimately the goal, I think personally, and this is what I try, this is my objective, is redefining what those norms are and redefining what the default setting is.
Totally.
Giving yourself grace in that process though, right? Like, because there's going to be a learning curve, right? Like to establish a new habit, you're going to revert back to what's your defaults are. But over time, as you learn these skills and you establish systems and you establish a new mindset and new value, or the values that you truly want, and being cognizant of them, you're creating new defaults that eventually over time, those are going to be the things that you revert to. And you're going to go, oh, I caught myself before defaulting to screaming. And you give yourself a pat on the back. You did it. Like, that's awesome. That's powerful.
Jodi, what I love about what you're saying is it's just having that awareness too. Like, for instance, the Miss Hannigan story I gave before. Mm-hmm. For me, part of why I like to embellish imaginatively, like to give her something, is because I know the next time she freaks out, right? Somewhere in the long line, it might be 5 minutes later, it might be a day later, or it might be in the moment. There might be a small part of her in her head saying, oh, here's Miss Hannigan. Mm-hmm. Oh, here she is. And it's just those little glimmers of, oh, instead of just going full hog into it, where it's just like,
yep,
right? And then blaming everybody. And then suddenly, this is the other thing. I feel like all of our defenses, all of our triggers, what they do is they help direct the issue to outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because when we get into that fight or flight, we're either fighting someone and making them the issue, or fleeing someone who is the issue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we don't just stand in our power, like in the moment going, what's the common denominator here? Oh, here I am again in this scenario. Oh,
I love. Yeah, exactly. And okay, so that is all right. Let's go move into the part of the discussion about this solution ideas of this. What you're talking about is mindfulness. Yes. Mm. And being able to become aware so that you can be proactive rather than reactive to mm-hmm. the situation.
Yeah.
So is that basically what you do? Like, what, how do you define that in your terms? Like, what does that look like?
You know, for me, it is going into some of the places that are uncomfortable briefly, but looking at them not to get you like a Freudian on the couch to go through it ad nauseum. It's to look at how is that impacting you right now, every day. You know, when your kid says, you know, they pop, ask for one more glass of water at bedtime and you're like, you know, freaking out. So, but it's interesting because we've talked a lot about the inner game, right?
Yep.
But there is a lot of the outer game part. Like my second step on this, on the Smart Mom path is the biology boosters. So I talk a lot about what are the biology boosters that truly do support us, because, you know, one of the modules is easy peasy bedtimes. Say that 30 times fast. Whoa. It's actually easy breezy bedtimes, but I couldn't get that out. Anyways, sometimes I get excited and talk too quickly. So for me, there's so many times where I have a parent, they're like, oh, my child just won't go to bed. And, you know, and then I go back to, okay, so where are you at with your own sleep? And they're like, and often that'll be our first week. Because usually I guarantee within 30 days, we can get the bedtime situation like to bed. Like it's enough. Like, let's do this. So, you know, there's that balance. So again, everyone's path is different. I think what I hear from my clients that they appreciate is that I have a structure in place that from the 25 decades, I think I've been doing this, which is, sounds really scary in the parenting trenches, is that those parents that are not perfect, but are really confident in their parenting, have kids that are on most days really respectful, that, you know, like that there's more harmony in the home than not. These are the things they're doing. So there are some key ingredients. But every family, the way they're going to play with those ingredients and make them their own is different. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. So the values you have are going to shape your family different than the values perhaps I have, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
The biology boosters that work for you. I remember one mom I was working with. Do you know like the thing that was the most relaxing for her? I remember I was on a radio show. She said this and I was like, excuse me, was swimming with sharks. And I was like, okay,
interesting.
And she was a volunteer at their local aquarium. And once a week, she would go in and swim with the sharks. And this was the most amazing, beautiful moment for her. Well, definitely not mine. Not be relaxing for me. Right? But it doesn't matter. What matters is, you know, you're doing it. Your kids know they're doing it. And you're working towards that.
So those biology boosters, you're talking about like some form of outlet or some form of self-care.
All the stress busters, all the like, even from attachment parenting. So the other aspect that I come from, which is part of my Adlerian training, but it's how does each member in your family feel that they belong? Do they feel they belong? Because just because you say, I love you to them, doesn't mean they necessarily feel that they belong. And how are they contributing meaningfully? So that's where, you know, I talk about, I believe one of the most undervalued, underrated extracurricular activity that most families aren't doing enough of are chores. And part of that for me, that's really important, is to diminish the sense of entitlement to have more gratitude and more appreciation for what we as parents do. And they're just basic life skills. I mean, seriously, learning how to clean a toilet, even if your child gets to have their own cleaner, they will appreciate it a whole lot more. And at least they got to know what a clean toilet looks like. Like, what do you need to do? Right. Like I'm talking basic here. Right. So it's the psychology, it's the emotional aspect, it's the spiritual aspect for some people, but it's also the physical. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting enough exercise? How is technology running your life? Because we live in a culture right now where distraction is the name of the game. And we have busyness. And busyness. And we have some of the top marketing minds being paid obscene amounts of money to keep us distracted and to keep us busy and to keep our children doing the same. And so I feel that no more time in history do we need to really get crystal clear on what are our values and making sure that we are congruent, especially then if you put a spirited child or stubborn child into the mix, because they sniff out incongruency in you like that, and they do not respect it.
Wow. Like you said in the beginning, parenting is hard. Parenting is complicated. And there's a lot that that goes into being parenting. And there's this whole pendulum of like going back and forth between like, am I doing the right thing? Or am I just being reactive? Or am I just, you know, there's so much that goes into it. But, no, I like what you're saying, that it's just becoming present and aware, and then being cognizant of what's going on inside of me, that I'm being triggered as a parent, and being able to be able to humbly address the individual situations and people so that you can work at finding the solutions and not just exploding or being reactive or not actually finding the solution. And then it just escalates, right?
You know, you started the bio with saying you were quite amazed that I said that temper tantrums are a smart mom's greatest gift. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd come back to that, just kind of maybe it'll provide a bit of a summary. For me, the reason I say that is because it's so rewarding, and I feel really honored and humbled when I see a mom who really goes through the steps and puts the time in, that then comes out the other side when her child has a meltdown. She is able to put her other thinking cap on, her big girl pants on, and say, okay, what need isn't being met now? What is this saying? Because those meltdowns, our emotions and our children, are often the barometers of our day. So it's just like looking at a thermometer and saying, oh, it's such and such degrees outside. I need a coat, or I actually need to take my sweater off because I'll be too hot. It's just information. It's not personal. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we get to that, we actually, what's so exciting for me is when I actually see how then a mom or dad knows how to use it to get actually closer, to actually use meltdowns, to use fights, to become closer. That is the goal. The goal is not to eradicate every single meltdown. And having said that, the intensity of meltdowns, the frequency certainly come down. But it's not to eradicate ever any disagreement. It's how do you get through those closer than ever?
I love that. So thank you so much, Kelly. I really enjoyed all of this, and your insights are just amazing. And thank you for sharing this. I want to acknowledge that your expertise, your knowledge is just, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing for families and helping us to have this clarity. It's empowering. And because parenting is so scary, you don't want to have those feelings where you're like, I just want to get checked into a mental hospital and send my kids to boarding school.
Or into a time capsule. Send me back once COVID is all done. That's when I will come back, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right? No, we got to be able to cope with what's going on and do it constructively, and not just be reactive and not just say, well, I'm just going to shut down. no, we want to get through this in a productive way so that we do end up closer in the long run. Because that's what, you know, I just think when we started this whole family thing, we thought, oh, I just love you. I just love you. And I want to have a family and we just love each other. Right. And then life happens and you don't want at the end of the day to go, I hate my family. I can't do this. I'm done. Right. I mean, I describe family culture journey as like, it's a roadmap. It's a journey. It's like a road trip. And you don't want to like pull off to the side of the road and be like, that's it. I'm walking. I'm done. I'm getting out and walking.
I'm hitchhiking home. You guys, I'll continue.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to say, I'm turning this car around. Like we usually, you know, a lot of people say, right? I'm turning this car around.
Just going one more time. We are going home. We are canceling this whole trip.
But being able to, I love what you're saying is you're using that as fuel to actually bring you closer as a family. Totally. And that's so powerful.
That's the key.
So Kelly, where can we find you? Where can we learn more about you and your power hour? And
oh, thank you so much. So you can find me at joyfullyparenting.com. And yeah, if anyone's listening right now and it really resonates or they feel that I might be able to be of support, you know, you can go on the site. There's a work with me part. There's also a free Tame Your Child's Temper Tantrums. It's a free course. So I highly recommend that. So there's a lot of free things. But if you really feel like this is the time, I'm really ready, enough is enough, I'm here. You know, I'm here and would love to support you.
Awesome. Joyfully Parenting. And I will have the link to your website as well as the Tame Your Temper Tantrums course in the show notes. And I'll also have that in my family leadership toolbox as well. So
great. There. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Jody. I so admire the stand you take for families. And I mentioned this before we went on air, how highly intelligent and thoughtful you are. I've been interviewed by a lot of people, but that for me, I'm just taking away that your incredible thoughtfulness, I just so admire. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. That's very humbling. So I appreciate hearing that. Thank you so much, Kelly.
Welcome.
Awesome. I'm glad you're able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with Jessica Frew, and she is the host of Husband-in-Law. And we talked about her thriving relationship with both her husband and her ex-husband. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Please download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Take a screenshot and tag me in a post about your experience with any questions you'd like me to answer on the show for a mention on the podcast. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Leadership Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember, Mother Teresa once said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.